VOA News, I'm Tommy McNeil. Labor Secretary Alex Acosta Wednesday defended his actions concerning a 2008 plea deal for billionaire Jeffrey Epstein, who has now been charged with sex trafficking underage girls. AP correspondent Tim McGuire.
Labor Secretary Alex Acosta says in 2008, when he was U.S. Attorney in South Florida, he and his prosecutors prevented local prosecutors from letting billionaire Jeffrey Epstein walk on sex trafficking charges.
Letting what the state attorney was ready to do go forward would have been absolutely awful.
Acosta says just a threat of federal charges forced Epstein to a state plea deal that included some jail time and being labeled a sex offender. Tim McGuire, Washington.
President Donald Trump said Wednesday he would soon substantially increase economic sanctions against Iran, even as the U.S. accused Tehran of nuclear extortion by breaching the 2015 nuclear treaty. The U.S. said in a statement to an emergency International Atomic Energy Agency meeting in Vienna that there's no credible reason for Iran to expand its nuclear program, and there's no way to read this as anything other than a crude and transparent attempt to extort payments from the international community. Kazim Gharib Abadi is Iran's ambassador.
The United States has imposed economic terrorism against some states, including through imposition of sanctions and extraterritorial application of them. The sadistic tendency of the United States to use illegal unilateral sanctions as an instrument to coerce sovereign states and private entities should come to an end.
Iran is already reeling from sanctions that Mr. Trump reimposed on the Islamic Republic when he pulled the U.S. out of the nuclear accord last year. Tehran has been appealing to the remaining signatories for sanctions relief. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. UN diplomats from 22 mostly European nations, along with Australia, Canada, Japan, and New Zealand, signed a letter in Geneva condemning China's treatment of Uyghurs and other Muslims in the Xinjiang region. The ambassadors expressed concern about credible reports of arbitrary detention, as well as widespread surveillance and restrictions, particularly targeting Uyghurs and other minorities in Xinjiang. They urged China to stop detaining minorities and grant them freedom of movement within their communities. The ambassadors chose to raise their concerns in a letter instead of a resolution, which China would have undoubtedly squelched. A new poll shows military veterans back President Trump, but many are wary of his judgment. AP correspondent Shelley Adler.
The Pew Research poll, which measured the political opinions of former service members, showed high levels of support for President Trump on a range of policies, from border security to his dealings with North Korea, NATO, and Russia. However, many veterans believe he doesn't listen enough to military leaders, and they distrust his decisions on the use of force. 57% of veterans approved of Trump's leadership as commander-in-chief, compared with 41% of Americans overall. Women, younger veterans, and Democrats generally were more skeptical of the president's respect for veterans. Shelley Adler, Washington.
U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is now running out of time to wrangle with an increasingly unruly caucus, seeking to unite Democrats at odds over oversight of the Trump administration in several key bills impacting defense spending and immigration enforcement. The U.S. House of Representatives is set to recess for the annual extended summer district working session beginning Friday, July 26th. The timeline gives the House Democratic leadership just about 3 weeks to pass the National Defense Authorization Act, as well as a number of new immigration bills addressing progressive Democrats' concerns about the humanitarian crisis at the southern border. Human rights lawyer Amal Clooney accused world leaders Wednesday of failing to protect journalists, even taking aim at President Trump for what she says is vilifying the media. Clooney made the remarks at the Global Conference for Media Freedom, called by British Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt and Canadian Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland, with the aim of improving protection for journalists around the world. Hunt told the gathering that they must not be discouraged by setbacks in the fight for free press.
In a world where Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi was murdered inside a Saudi diplomatic property, and talented young journalist Lyra McKee was shot dead by dissident Republicans in Northern Ireland, it would be easy to succumb to fatalism. But we must resist that.
Britain and Canada also announced they would establish the Global Media Defense Fund. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A UN-sponsored counter-terrorism conference has opened in Kenya.
The mix of capabilities and frameworks.
As Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta, Rwanda's parliament votes to scrap the article in the penal code that criminalizes defamation against the president, who benefits the most from economic growth in West Africa. A Zimbabwe opposition leader goes to court today for treason, and a Malawi human rights activist and protest leader is denied bail following his arrest.
The charges are not that very clear, but we believe it's politically motivated. He's being targeted just because he's one of the frontline activists.
Timothy Mtambo is the chair of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition of Malawi, and a new law prescribes harsh penalties for cruelty towards wildlife in Uganda. Those stories and more, plus Samson O'Malley's Africa Cup of Nations polls are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenya has vowed to fight against terrorism through development of county action plans to counter and prevent violent extremism. Speaking at the opening of a two-day counter-terrorism conference in Nairobi, President Uhuru Kenyatta said the plan will bring together security agencies to fight terrorism. African Union Chairperson Musa Faki also said terrorism is a threat to Africa's development. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Speaking at the counter-terrorism conference in Nairobi yesterday, Wednesday, President Uhuru Kenyatta said the county plans are tailored to security needs in all counties and is meant to bring together security sector actors covering enforcement agencies. Kenyatta says measures to combat violent extremism would be complemented by student safety and security mechanisms developed by the Ministry of Education.
The groups and those it has inspired have an active presence in Africa, taking territory, disrupting the rule of law. Groups like Al-Shabaab and Boko Haram, the continued ability of terror groups to radicalize, recruit, and train our young people, and thereafter deploy them to commit unspeakable horrors, is a wake-up call for all of us, both state and non-state actors. We need to respond to the profound threat of terrorism with a mix of capabilities and frameworks.
Many attacks in Kenya, especially along the northeastern part, have been targeting learning institutions. The African Union chairperson Musa Faki said that terror groups are a threat to the development of Africa and that the use of force alone will not help curb the situation.
The threat of terrorism in Africa is spreading and destabilizing entire regions. And I'm greatly concerned by the situation in the Sahel and the increasing risks in West Africa. Boko Haram and its splinter faction continue to terrorize local populations and attack security forces in northeast Nigeria and the Lake Chad Basin. With the rise of misinformation on social media and the internet, young people also need education and empowerment to denounce manipulative narratives, xenophobia and hate speech, which can all lead to online radicalization.
On the other hand, the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres assured African leaders that the UN is committed in finding solutions to fight terrorism.
To consider the challenges of terrorism in Africa today, as well as the opportunities for improving cooperation, strengthening existing partnerships, and building new ones.
The conference is set to come to an end today, Thursday. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
A rights activist in Malawi says the country is increasingly becoming unsafe for human rights defenders. Timothy Mtambo, chair of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition of Malawi, says human rights activists are being attacked daily. The Human Rights Defenders Coalition has been leading protests calling for the resignation of Malawi Elections Commission Chairperson Justice Jane Ansa following the disputed May 21st presidential election. Police on Tuesday arrested Gift Trapens, leader of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, and the Reverend McDonald Sebereka, The police have yet to say why the two were arrested, but there are rumors that the pair was arrested because they allegedly took money to conduct a UNAIDS workshop, but never did. Mtambo said the arrests are politically motivated.
The charges are not that very clear, but we believe it's politically motivated. For instance, the charges that have been given to Mr. Trappens, they are talking about operating an illegal organization, which is actually not true. There's an organization that was registered some time back called Mango. Mr. Trappens registered that organization under the laws of Malawi using the Trustees Incorporation Act. Now, it is so shocking and surprising that there were issues with that organization, and the government and the police arrest Mr. Trappens and Mr. Senderek, and they say that organization was not registered with the NGO board, so it is illegal. So we strongly believe that he's being targeted just because he's one of the frontline activists.
You mentioned the charges are not clear. There is some suggestion that the government is claiming that Mr. Trappens and the others, that the arrest was instigated by UNAIDS, the UNAIDS, because they allegedly pocketed money for workshops that they never conducted but produced fake receipts.
It's not true conclusively that Mr. Trappens and Mr. Sembereka per se, that they were involved in that. As far as I'm concerned, what I'm hearing is that the only reason Mr. Trappens was brought in the equation is because he registered the organization. So that's why we are saying there might be issues. Probably things will be more and more clear by tomorrow. So the fact is, why did the police rush to arrest the people instead of maybe using the NGO board to engage the two parties? So we know that there is political influence, political interference, even the whole issue of the bail. Everyone has got the right to get a bail. And we don't see the reason that they could deny them a bail since yesterday and today.
As you know, Mr. Trappens, Human Rights Defenders Coalition, your organization, Yes. You are leading this protest calling for the resignation of Justice Ansah. Are you saying that's part of the reasons behind the quick arrest?
Exactly, because there is a lot of state-sponsored propaganda here. We are receiving attacks day in, day out. Mr. Trappens, myself, and our members in the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, we are also receiving a lot of threats. So we are actually living in fear right here in Malawi. And we are also asked probably the international community to actually intervene because it's not becoming safer to stay here in Malawi. That's why we know that the government is looking at any opportunity to trample down on some of us. Today it's Trappens and Senderek, tomorrow it might be me. So it's becoming so difficult that we are living in a country where it is not safe for human rights defenders. And to a greater extent, it's becoming difficult for people to comment on issues of national importance or to hold the government accountable.
Timothy Ntambo is the chair of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition of Malawi. You're speaking with me from the capital, Lilongwe. An official of Zimbabwe's main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, is due in court today, Thursday. Job Sikala, deputy secretary general of the MDC, was charged with treason on Monday for allegedly saying that the MDC would not allow President Emmerson Mnangagwa to complete his term in office. MDC spokesman Daniel Molukele says the party has never recognized the official results from the 2018 presidential election because they were manipulated.
We spent the past day looking forward to his appearance in court at Harare Magistrate Court. Earlier on in the day and then later on in the afternoon, there was the promise that he would appear. But it seems it was a decoy from the prosecution authorities. So we are made to understand that he's now in Masingo across the country. And he'll appear in court in a neighboring town called Bikita.
Why is he being moved from Harare to Bikita?
Okay, the original sort of scene of the whole incident that led to his eventual arrest was a rally in Bikita where there is a by-election at council level. So he was addressing a rally last weekend. So they're saying they're taking the court case back to where the whole drama started.
The government is charging him with treason. That's a very serious offense.
Yeah, he's being charged for subversion under Section 59. But what then happens is that he's actually the 25th person since January this year to be charged. It's an array of opposition political leaders like Honorable Scala and also civil society leaders. So it's very common now in Zimbabwe to be charged under that section.
The government said he allegedly said that the party, meaning the MDC, would not allow President Emmerson Mnangagwa to complete his term of office. Did he say that? And if he did so, what exactly was he talking about?
Yeah, everything arises from the disputed presidential election result. They made the aware that the MDC up to today does not recognize the official results because we are very clear that they were manipulated. So that there is that context that as a political party, we do not recognize the president of Emmerson Mnangagwa. So we are also saying, especially our supporters, that everything needs to be done, especially with the Western economy, that a new political dispensation beyond the current one be set up. And as the MDC, we had a Congress recently where we agreed that we need to move Zimbabwe towards political legitimacy, and it starts by broadening the political process, enabling a national dialogue process that allows us to come up with a mechanism that will lead eventually to return to full democracy in Zimbabwe.
Daniel Mulukele is the spokesman for Zimbabwe's main opposition, the Movement for Democratic Change. He was speaking with me from the capital, Harare. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 11th. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Rwanda's parliament has voted to scrap the article in the country's penal code that criminalizes defamation against the president. As Eugene Uwimana reports from Kigali, this came after an independent lawyer with the Rwandan Journalists Association challenged the article before the country's Supreme Court.
The decision by parliament to scrap Article 236 of the new penal code followed heavy criticism. Evodu Izeimana, Minister of State for Justice, responsible for constitutional affairs, says the amendment was made in reaction to claims by many activists. Even though the Supreme Court ruled that this article was in line with the Constitution, after hearing claims from concerned activists, like journalists and others who fight for the freedom of speech, who were claiming to be denied access to criticize office of the president. That's why we think this article should be scrapped. Although parliament has approved the bill, still some members want the government to attentively scrutinize any bill to avoid pressure from the public. This is Gwaka Pierre Clavel. They should deeply analyze the bill and hear the Supreme Court's view, because many of the articles which are going to be amended were controversial even here in the House. So I wanted to ask if you can attentively scrutinize the bill so that laws cannot be quickly resent like this, as if there was no clear study. Richard Mugisha, an independent lawyer, had filed the case challenging the new penal code before the Supreme Court. However, the Supreme Court ruled to retain the article. The decision to make insulting the head of state a criminal offense has been widely debated on social media platforms in Rwanda. Journalists have been saying that this article made the president to be untouchable as far as holding him accountable is concerned. For lawyer Mugisha, the first satisfaction was to be given a space for challenging the penal code.
The first thing that you have to remember is that for the first time, this court made a ruling that anyone who has any issue with a legislation can challenge its constitutionality in the court. So that is a process that we are very happy with.
After numerous claims by journalists and other activists, the office of President Kagame issued a statement announcing the position of the president, which makes defaming the head of state not a criminal offense but a civil matter. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Six of the 10 fastest growing economies in Africa in 2018 were in West Africa. Despite that impressive rate of economic growth, inequality had skyrocketed. According to a report out this week from Oxfam International, in most countries, the benefits of this unprecedented economic growth had gone to a tiny few. Today, the wealthiest 1% of West Africans own more than everyone combined in the region. Kwesi Obeng, co-author of the report, spoke to Ricky Stryak about what this inequality means.
Apart from the model, there's also an issue of political commitment, because our argument is that inequality is not inevitable, it's not fit, it's not predestined. It can be addressed by governments being committed and two, also by public policy. And so we think that one, the economic model is not working, it's not delivering for ordinary people, the 99%, and two, also the lack of commitment, particularly from governments in the region, is a major, major contributory factor.
One thing you guys point out in the study is not that it's not necessarily bad for economies to grow, for people to make more money. It's the fact that still basic public services in many of these countries, such as education and healthcare, are not available to most people.
That's correct, because the evidence available from different actors around the world point to the fact that to address inequality, you need to pay attention to a few things. And these few things, we try to tackle three of the top, you know, the top three. And these are social spending, particularly on education, healthcare, and social protection. And then also the progressivity of the tax system, and of course, labor rights. If you tackle these areas, you actually would be able to address inequality. And for West Africa, you really can't talk about inequality if you don't address a sector that employs the largest amount of the population, which is agriculture.
But you mentioned labor rights, for example. How much does minimum wage and minimum wage policies, how much do those policies affect this inequality?
Across the region, minimum wages are very low. So the Nigerians just early this year managed to push the government to raise the minimum wage. It's still not enough. It can't take a worker home at the end of the day. But it's also important to refract this conversation through the lens of the informal sector. In the informal sector, so now you have the minimum wage that really isn't minimum to the extent that it can address the minimum livelihoods of people. The informal sector are not even guaranteed because the sector, it's badly regulated, it's precarious.
That was Kwesi Obeng, co-author of The West Africa Inequality Crisis and an inequality expert at Oxfam International. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Abuja, Nigeria. Wildlife activists in Uganda have welcomed President Yoweri Museveni's ascension to the new law that provides harsh penalties for those involved in wildlife crimes. Under the law, traffickers and poachers could get life sentences or be subjected to fines of up to $5.5 million. Mugumi David Rakorinj reports from Kampala.
Dr. Kankwasa Varirega, a commissioner of wildlife conservation in the Ministry of Tourism, says the new law, Wildlife Authority Bill, will help protect some of endangered animals such as African elephants, lions, chimpanzees, leopards, and some reptiles.
The law has come up with stringent penalties, including a life sentence and a fine of up to 20 billion Uganda shillings for wildlife crime related to endangered species. This will help a great deal in curbing the wildlife crime that threatens wildlife species.
Joseph Masembe, an environmental activist in Uganda, says the new law is a step in the right direction.
People have been really messing with our wildlife and getting away with it every other day. Now, when you face the threat of life imprisonment or fines in the millions or billions of shillings, it means people are going to think twice before they undertake to do certain otherwise criminal acts.
Masembe is the founder of Little Hands Go Green, a local NGO that works with children to preserve the environment. The new law also provides for a compensation scheme for properties destroyed by animals. Sharon Okello, the spokesperson of Natural Resources Conservation Network, says aside from punishing offenders, the government should work on ways of reducing people-wildlife conflicts.
Some of these animals destroy people's crops. So if an electric fence is set up to block the animals from accessing the neighboring crops, which give the neighbors income, then that would be good.
Eric Ntalo, a wildlife activist and tourism enthusiast in Uganda, believes the law will help boost tourism sector in the country.
Over 50% of Uganda's tourism is majorly wildlife. And without conservation of this wildlife, that means you do not have tourism in place.
Last year, villagers killed 11 lions in one of Uganda's game parks in revenge of a cow that was allegedly eaten by lions. For VOA News, I am Gume, Davis Rwakarinje in Kampala, Uganda.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria, with a special Africa Cup of Nations sports report. Good Thursday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin Thursday's sports news in Egypt, where the 2019 African Cup of Nations quarterfinal matches got underway on Wednesday with two fixtures. In Cairo, Super Eagles defender Willem Troost-Ekong scored a dramatic late winner to send Nigeria into the African Cup of Nations semi-final at the expense of South Africa after defeating Bafana Bafana of South Africa 2-1 at the Cairo International Stadium on Wednesday night. Samuel Chukwueze opened the deadlock after 27 minutes. VAR was used to confirm South Africa's equalizer scored by Bongani Zungu after 74 minutes. But William Troost-Ekong scored 1 minute from time to send the Super Eagles for the semi-final for the first time since they were crowned champions in 2013. William Troost-Ekong and Samuel Chukwueze, who got their names on the scorer's sheet, spoke on the Super Eagles' victory after the match.
I think we showed, again, great character. Especially, I think we were in the game well. Yeah, we were on the right way, but another big task ahead. But I'm just very happy for the boys.
Well, I'm so happy for winning the game because they are the one that win the hosting country. So it was an easy game for us to win. So we were disciplined in the field and everybody was doing their job. So I'm very, very happy.
Gerard Raw, Super Eagles coach, said his side were lucky to score in the last minute.
We are happy because we can stay in this wonderful country another 10 days. And I hope that we can also go to the final.
South Africa English Scottish manager Stuart Baxter admitted the nature of the defeat was tough to digest.
We didn't play our best in the first half. I didn't think we were brave enough in our pressing. We allowed Nigeria to grow into the game. We had some good moments, but in general, we needed to change some things. So we changed them at half-time, and I thought we were better in the second half. We get back to 1-1, and then last minutes of the game, it's tough to take.
Bafana Bongani Zungu, who got the equalizer for his side, and Dean Fonman were left disappointed after their loss to Nigeria.
Very disappointing results. I think first half, you know, we gave them a lot of respect.
We didn't really hurt them enough. Then they get their goal, and again, they sat off and really waited for us to make mistakes.
In the first quarterfinal match on Wednesday, Idrissa Gueye scored in the 69th minute to hand Senegal a 1-0 win over Benin and send the Lions of Taranga to the semifinals of the Total African Cup of Nations Egypt 2019. Kalidou Koulibaly and Chikwu Konate described their fellow West African neighbors Benin as a tough side, but were glad to win.
It was a difficult game. We knew that Benin made a very good Cup of Africa. They win against Morocco the last game, so it was really difficult for us today. We have to be ready for the next game, but tomorrow we will watch the game and see who we will play for the next game.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. That is it for this Thursday, July 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.